Last week, I saw that this is what a lot of millennials do. I think we have got a few millennials here in the crowd. Apparently, this is what a lot of millennials do. And I find out that it's not just millennials. A lot of people like to do this. They like to switch off the light when everyone has gone to sleep. All the kids have gone to sleep. Put off the lights and just look at the Christmas tree lights. Just sit there in the dark and just watch the lights. And I didn't know I'd like to do this, but I like to do this. And apparently, some people think that we like doing this because it's a way of like remembering, you know, our childhood, or I'm sure a lot of memories associated to Christmas lights, or if you don't do Christmas trees, maybe like candles or Christmas songs, a lot of experience, a lot of memories tied to the Christmas tree, right? And so a way to put off the light and just to remember, in a way, simpler days, right? Before a lot of flashy lights, a lot of screens overtake our life. Those were the days when things were a lot more simpler. Perhaps there's association of memories of home, right? Memories of loved ones that we associate with Christmas and with Christmas tree. And also, in that sense, it is associated to quite powerful emotions, right? A lot of memories, a lot of things that we remember from the past. Of course, sometimes it's romanticized. Sometimes it's idealized, it's nostalgia, right? It's almost this kind of made-up sentiment that things were better in the past, or when things were much better, much simpler. It may not necessarily be always the case, but I think Christmas becomes a time to remember the past. And I think it points to something that that struck me as I thought about this in line with the passage for reflection today. And the thought is that I think at least for me, Christmas is so often associated with the past. It's associated with what has happened, what we've gone through, specific Christmases that we especially remember, for example. Christmas is often associated with the past, a lot of nostalgia. We see a lot of the ads on YouTube, for example. There's a lot of playing on the sentiment of the memories and all of that. And of course, all of that is beautiful and meaningful. But what's striking about like what we call Advent, right? The Advent in church tradition, in Christian tradition, Advent is the I want to say 4 weeks before the Christmas Day. It's the Sundays leading up to, it's the weeks leading up to Christmas Day. And what's striking about Advent is that it's future-oriented. It's looking to a future. Whereas Christmas is often associated with the past, Advent as a Christian tradition, as something that historically Christians have done in the past, is something that's future-oriented. It's a way of looking forward to the future. And I think we don't necessarily like celebrate, commemorate Advent very strictly, but as the Advent season, I think if Christmas only becomes a way of looking back, thinking of the past, I think there's something that we miss when our focus is only on the past and not on the future. So I thought it'd be nice to look at Isaiah and the prophets and see what they can teach us about looking to the future, looking forward to something that's coming. Isaiah chapter 9, of course, helps us to look at the way the prophets talked about what is coming, what's looking forward to what God is going to do. We have just finished our emphasis on the minor prophets, a few months that we went through the minor prophets. And you might remember, right, the theme, the prominent themes from the minor prophet is that the prophets called the people to look to what God is going to do, the day of the Lord that is coming, how God is going to do something. And so the focus today is to look at Isaiah chapter 9 and see what we have in store for us. And I just realized, as I said, Isaiah chapter 9, that I haven't asked Elsa to read for us. So why don't you come and just read Isaiah chapter 9 for us from Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1 to 7.
or 1 to 7?
1 to 7.
1 to 7. Yeah. Nevertheless, there will be no more gloom for those who were in distress. In the past, he humbled the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali. But in the future, he will honor Galilee of the nations, by the way of the sea beyond the Jordan. The people walking in darkness have seen a great light. On those living in the land of deep darkness, the light has dawned. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. For as in the day of Midian's defeat, you have shattered the yoke that burdens them, the bar across their shoulders, the rod of their oppressor. Every warrior's boot used in battle and every garment rolled in blood will be destined for burning, will be fuel for the fire. For to us a child is born, to us a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. Of the greatness of his government and peace there will be no end. He will reign on David's throne and over his kingdom, establishing and upholding it with justice and righteousness from that time on and forever. The zeal of the Lord Almighty will accomplish this.
Thank you, Elsa. That was Isaiah chapter 9, verse 1 to 7, and that's the text we'll be looking at today. So let's look at what's going on in this part of the story, in this section of the story. Isaiah 9 is one of the major prophets. It's not one of the minor prophets, it's a major prophet, but he was active before the time when all of the minor prophets that we looked at, right? Amos, Jonah, before those guys came into the scene. And to put it in very brief, we've got a people who were living in relative comfort. They were doing pretty well. They were managing fine. And the prophets come into the scene and say, disaster is going to come on this nation. You are going to be broken up. You're going to be captured by the Assyrians, the Babylonians, and deep darkness is going to descend on these nations, on this nation, on these two kingdoms. And the people, some of them paid attention, but some of them did not pay attention, and they just life just went on as usual. One of the core message of the prophets is to tell them to look to the future, to look to what God is going to do. You might say that the Israelites, the people of these two kingdoms, were let's call them past oriented. They were looking to the past. They kept going back to the things that they knew. Like, they kept going back to the old sins. They kept going back to, we can even say, nostalgia, remembering their older temple and complaining and, you know, whining that this new temple is not as great. They kept looking back to the past. The paradigms, the way they looked at the world was determined by what they had experienced and gone through in the past. They're like, what else could be better than the great temple that we had? Those were the days. Like, let's do the things that we used to do. And even when they were taken away for exile by the Assyrians and Babylonians, and when they came back, they rebuilt the temple. And even then, they were like, if only we can rebuild the temple, if only we can bring the people together, if only we can build a wall around us, make our city secure, that would solve our problem, they thought. They thought that going back to the ways that things were would solve their problem. But they did rebuild the temple. They did rebuild the wall. But we are told that when the temple is rebuilt, the elders in the congregation who saw the first temple, they wept because this was not it. This is not what they were looking for. This doesn't solve anything. It was not as grand or as powerful as it was in the past. And they're like, maybe God has indeed forgotten about us. Maybe God has indeed given up on us. And so the nations descended into spiritual darkness. They descended into idolatry. They descended into injustice, trampling over one another, the poor, the helpless. Everything is about might. If you have the power, if you have money, if you can make things happen, that's all that matters. So self-preservation, profiting, and they just descended into deep darkness. It was in this context that the prophets come and say, stop looking to the past. Stop looking to how things were. Rather than that, look ahead to what God is going to do. Look ahead to the great light that's coming through which God is going to bring joy and salvation to this nation. So the first thing that the prophets, to summarize what they say, one of the first thing that the prophets say is, look for the coming light. Look for what's coming ahead of you. The second thing they say is, they point to the people and remind them that we are in the dark. We are in a time of darkness. These are dark times, and we've got to keep moving on. We are lost. We are in this deep darkness. We must recognize that we are lost. We need God to help us. We are in a time of deep darkness. See, during this time, as the picture down there depicts, the people thought, you know what, we're fine. Like, okay, it wasn't as great, but we've got a land, we've got a temple, we've got money, we've got wealth, we have got relative comfort. You know what, life is not too bad. It's fine. And so what we see in the prophetic books is that the people would surround themselves with prophets and pastors who would say, you guys are, keep it up. This is a time of peace. Everything is fine. You guys are doing fine. A bit of rough edges here and there, but by and large, life is good. You guys are fine. You guys are doing fine. In that context, the prophets come and tell the people, we're not fine. We're in a time of deep darkness. We're in a time of which God is absent from among us. We are lost. We are in a time of deep darkness. So the prophets, what they do, one of the prophets, to summarize what they say, is to remind people that they were in a time of darkness. They were lost and they need to keep walking. The difference between people who know that they're lost, or the difference between people who recognize that they're in darkness versus the people who don't recognize, is that those who recognize that they're lost, they keep walking. They don't settle, right? They don't think that this is home, but they recognize that they're lost and they seek out a way. They seek out for light in the darkness. They keep walking. And so I think the notion of walking in the darkness is so crucial that even when they're in the darkness, they don't stop walking. They keep walking. They're not just looking to the past. They're not just settling for what they have here. They kept walking. They kept looking for light, and they were always seeking. The prophets, that is, of course, what the prophets wanted. The prophets called for them, we need to keep walking. This is not it. This is not our home. This is not what God called us out for. We must keep seeking the true light. We must keep looking for the life. Stop gazing at the past, at the glories of the past. That was not our home. This is not our home. The true home is ahead. The great light is coming. Keep looking for the day of the Lord, when God will act and God will shine the light. Now, when they hear this message, presumably the people will think, like, look to what? Look forward to what? What could possibly be better than the glory of the temple? When we used to worship with thousands and thousands of people, what could possibly be better than worshiping in a temple with God's people, having a kingdom that we can call God's kingdom? What could possibly be better? To that response, the prophets tell them that, in fact, that's the opposite. There's great joy that is in store for those who keep walking. There's great joy for those who are anticipating and waiting for God to move. And we don't have to read the whole thing, but verse 3, if you can just look at the language used there. You have enlarged the nation and increased their joy. They rejoice before you as people rejoice at the harvest, as warriors rejoice when dividing the plunder. This is a language of great joy. This is not a language of, you know, yeah, life is okay, you know, you just manage, like, this is fine, we just, let's accept this. That's not the language that we see here. The language we see here, the prophets speaking of a future, is a language of great joy. It's not just relief, but it's language of jubilation, right? Increased their joy. Again, let me go back to the incident that I mentioned earlier, in which the elders, they saw the temple and the new temple, and they wept because it's not as grand, it's not as glorious as they remembered. Maybe the people thought, you know what, we just have to settle for this. It's not the best, but it's enough. At least we've got a roof in our on top of us. Maybe this is what we need to be just happy about. Maybe this is just something that we need to get used to. That's not what we see here. What we see here is that there's going to be a great joy, and the prophets are calling the people to anticipate and to expect this great joy. In a way, the prophets are also saying, do not settle for what you have. You might say it's enough, it's survival, it's all of that, but the prophets are calling the people to not settle for what they already have, but to keep looking for a greater joy, to keep looking for something that's in the future, the day of the Lord, when the light will shine in the dark and a greater joy, a greater jubilation is going to descend on the people. These are the words of the prophet, pushing the people to keep moving, to not be resigned to the situation or to their past. Yes, they have to manage the present, but they should also be anticipating and looking for the future, what God is going to do in the future. So what exactly is God going to do in the future? And we see all of this summarized in this tight few verses here. The promise of joy is captured in a person who is going to be born, a baby who is going to be born. The Israelites asked, what could possibly be better than the temple? What could possibly be better than the thousands of people worshiping and obeying God? What could possibly be better? The prophets say, this child, this is much better than the past, than all of the things that they had experienced in the past. For unto us a child is born, a son is given, and the government will be on his shoulders, and he will be called Wonderful Counselor, Mighty God, Everlasting Father, Prince of Peace. The child will be given, and this child, when the child is born, yes, this is much better than the temple. This is much better than the great memories of the past that they hold so dear. Because this child will, among other things, this child will be called a Wonderful Counselor. Somebody who is somebody who guides them, somebody who mentors them. And think about it, when you are in the dark, when you are lost in the dark, a counselor, somebody who leads the way for you, that's precisely what we need, somebody who counsels you and guides you and leads you. I think today, in the day of ChatGPT, right? In a way, ChatGPT has become counselors for myself as well, and in some aspects. The thing about ChatGPT is that you can ask it questions. It's always available, and they don't judge you. I mean, you don't have to feel. You should be, actually. You should feel vulnerable. You should feel a bit careful. But the sense is that you can just pour out whatever anxieties you have, and you can ask questions, and it just pushes back answers for you. And it feels like, wow, this is a counselor right there sitting for us and helping us. Think of it. This shows that today we evermore need counsel. We need clarity in life. We need guidance for the things that we do, the decisions that we make. Today, all of us, we long for such a wonderful counselor who is trustworthy, right? Who will not go around spilling your secrets, and who is also resourceful, who knows the answers, who knows the solutions to whatever it is that you have to ask. And so the wonderful counselor, a ChatGPT magnified thousands, infinite times, like who can counsel, who is there as a kind, wise, and ever-present counselor for us. Yes, the temple is much better than the temple because this is a wonderful counselor. He goes on to say, this child is the mighty God, the everlasting Father. What could be better than the temple? What could be better than the temple which represents God's presence? where you can meet with God, when you can pray and worship God, what could be better than the temple? What about God's actual presence? What about God walking with us and being with us, not just in one place in Jerusalem, in a temple, but God, through His Spirit, being with us, the everlasting Father, the mighty God, being with us and walking with us in every walk, every step of our life. Yes, that's, of course, much better than the temple, the physical temple, no matter how much, how useful it was in its day and age. What could be better than having God with us, God who is the life-giving creator, God who can heal, God who is a good and kind God, who is fair, who is loving, God who is victorious over death, God who is victorious over sin? What could be better, of course, than God's actual presence with us in the form of this baby? And so the people were encouraged by the prophets to look to this greater light that was coming in the form of Jesus, the baby boy, the baby child who was to be born. That is something that they should be looking forward to, not just settling for wherever they are, of even for settling for the darkness that they were living in. This child has been given to us. This child has been born for us, and that is the coming light. Therefore, keep walking, keep waiting. Don't settle for where you are. The prophets tell the people, anticipate the joy of the Lord, the joy of God that's coming in the person of Jesus Christ. I think part of the message here is to acknowledge that anything other than this, no matter how great, say, the temple or military might, let's say, or success or wealth, anything other than this is effectively darkness. It pales in comparison to the promise that stands out for us, the light, the true light that is promised by the prophets. Perhaps the Israelites during the time, they were blessed with good life. Perhaps they have a happy past, happy memories. But it pales in comparison to what God promised in the form, in the person of Jesus, the Son, that the baby that is to be born. Let's think about ourselves in that context. I think what we get from this story, this message of looking to God's work in our lives, perhaps we may be blessed with a good life, a good past, good memories. Perhaps we are blessed with security, with goodness, with shelter, all of that stuff. But I think what the message of the prophets remind us is that all of that pales in comparison to the promise of God's presence with us, to the promise of what Jesus embodies for us. Yes, we can celebrate life, we can celebrate all the memories, we can celebrate the good things, we can celebrate the wealth that we may have, we can celebrate the good health that we have, and at the same time still hope for the greater light of Jesus, the greater light that is coming, and that means to keep moving, to keep waiting, and to keep walking, even when we find ourselves in the dark, or perhaps not so much in the dark, wherever we are, it pushes us to keep waiting and keep walking for the promise that is held out for us in Jesus Christ. So perhaps you like to do this. You like to switch off the lights and look at the Christmas tree or look at a candle or whatever it is. But I want to encourage us as we do this, think about the Christmas tree and what it means or whatever it means to us, let it not just point you to the past of all the good things that we have been blessed with, but let it also point you to the future of what the greater light means for us. That not only our past and the things that we have gone through, what we have experienced, but we look to the future when this will be true for us, that the wonderful counselor will be with us, Of course, when Isaiah was written, it was before Jesus was born. And so Jesus has already been born and all of that. But today, and especially during the season of Advent, we are looking to the future when Jesus will return, when Jesus will be with us in a more fuller way, when all of the promises that has been made to us will be made real. And with that, as we think about the wonderful things around Christmas and many other things, the blessings, we also look to the future when the wonderful Counselor, the Mighty God, the Everlasting Father, the Prince of Peace will be with us. Right. So on Advent, we look to the return of Jesus, not just to that past 0 AD or whatever that Jesus was born, but we also look to the future, a time when death will be defeated, when sins will be powerless, when holiness and godliness will be natural for us. Like we struggle on a daily basis with godliness, righteousness, holiness. We look forward to a time when holiness will be natural because we have been transformed by the work of the Holy Spirit. We look forward to a time when the power of the resurrection will be on us and our bodies. We look forward to a time when justice and truth will, in the words of Amos, will roll down in this world. The things that we see in the world, injustice, brokenness, it will be restored and reconciled. Injustice will bow to Jesus, and tears will be wiped away, as we read in Revelations. We look to a time when peoples, nations, ethnicities, races will be gathered on earth as it is in heaven, when all languages will be spoken to praise Jesus, to praise our good God. So let the lights of Christmas point us to that future hope and keep us moving, keep us waiting, even when we see ourselves in the dark. Keep us seeking, ever seeking God's action in this world, in our world. And so as I close, I want to give a time for us to kind of reflect on that. I want to invite you, darkness also means silence. I want to invite you in a time of silence. If you want to close your eyes, make it dark because we can't switch off the lights, everything. But just spend a time in silence, in darkness, so to say. Not because we want to celebrate darkness or celebrate being lost, but so that we might understand the joy of seeing light, the joy of hearing the Word of God. And so as we do that, let us be reminded that without the hope of the light of Jesus, whatever we have, it's darkness in comparison. It pales in comparison. And it's easy to forget that with all the noise and the lights that we have in our world today. But wherever we are, let us be reminded that we want to be people who walk, who keep walking, looking for light. Not people who have settled for where we are, but people who keep looking for what Jesus is going to do in the future. So I'm just going to leave it there. Just take a minute of silence, and I'm going to ask Colin to come back up and lead us in a song response after that.